Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
The Pure Hoops Podcast, NBA Finals Edition. We are in the midst of this series. BJ Armstrong in LA, Eric Newman in New York. And Miami made it interesting, cutting it to 2-1. LeBron and the Lakers fought them off in game four, BJ. It's 3-1 LA. Friday night is game five. Lakers looking to close it. LeBron looking for his fourth ring. The Lakers looking for their 17th title. We've got a big guest coming on today to talk about it. But before we welcome him, where are you at with the finals series?
3-1 with the Lakers. Excellent job of being able to sustain what was necessary to win that game four, because that was a big time win for them. Big time performance by really the role players. I thought in particular KCP and Rajon Rondo, Markieff Morris, they really stepped up to the plate. And even though offensively he didn't have one of his, you know, probably premier games on the offensive end, talking about Anthony Davis defensively, I thought he was outstanding, accepting the challenge of guarding Jimmy Butler and just creating havoc on the defensive end. So overall, terrific job by the LA Lakers. Now the most difficult game, which is closing a team out. It's always a very difficult game to do. And we'll see how this plays out. We're taping here on Thursday, games tomorrow night. And we'll see what LeBron James and company will, how they will perform in a closeout game. It should be, I'm sure Miami have something to say about that.
They're going to fight. They're going to fight tooth and nail. But the Lakers are in a really good rhythm now. And despite Bam coming back, the Lakers did a heck of a job with the chess match in game four. Obviously, it's been one hell of a journey through the bubble. And I can't think of a better person to have on with us today to discuss the finals and really put a bow on what we've seen the past few months than good friend to us, good friend to the show, the one and only Howard Beck. My friend, how are you?
Great. Great to see you all again.
Oh, Howard, thank you so much. He's the best person. Not one of the best. He's the best person to come on. We can share some laughs, a little entertainment. We can laugh at ourselves. See,
I got to keep his ego in check. I got to keep his ego in check. In front of that background.
It's nice getting the nice pumped up intro, but then I feel like it sets the bar too high and all I could do is disappoint your listeners at that point. Like, it's setting me up to fail.
Let's take that again. Our mediocre fallback guest for the day.
There we go.
He was available. He was available.
Howard Beck, he's available.
Howard, a final we didn't expect in terms of injuries and how Miami looked going through the Eastern Conference, especially with the win over the Celtics. Jimmy Butler, a monster game three, brings it back to 2-1, and then he starts red hot 5-for-5 in game four. What are you thinking at that point to start game four?
I'm thinking there's a shot. There's a chance of this still being a series, but, you know, look, we all know teams can come out with a lot of adrenaline and fire. And, you know, a first quarter, anytime you've got two really well-matched teams, you're expecting it's going to be close. I didn't necessarily assume that much, but I had hope. And that's because, you know, as anybody who's not a partisan in this thing, my hope is for a great series. And from the moment that Bam and Goran Dragic went down, and then the way the next two games unfolded, all you could think was, oh, man, we're going to get this after this incredible postseason, everything that the NBA accomplished with the bubble, and this really intriguing, fun Miami team that's built differently than other contenders, you know, in most recent seasons. And this is the way it's going to go down. Like you just don't want to see it happen that way for all kinds of reasons. And so there was a glimmer of hope there, a flicker of hope as the Heat come out in game four. But I don't think we should be surprised at the outcome, because Bam clearly was not at 100%. And how could he be? Dragic still not playing, probably won't in this series, however long it goes. And yeah, unfortunately, whether this thing ends Friday night in game five or Sunday in game six, it feels like that's where this is destined to go. And I think while we will not, anybody who's reasonable or rational will not slap an asterisk on this, we will wonder what might have been if the Heat had been able to stay whole.
You know, Har, you know, you made some interesting remarks about what if. And do you think that the Lakers, what they were able to do in game four, was it more indicative of what LeBron James will? Because there's been so much talk about, he said, quote, and I'm just giving him a correct quote here. He said this was one of the biggest games of his career. Do you think that, you know, what LeBron James has been able to do thus far in this series, where do you rank this as far as games played? I mean, he's been in the finals, what, 9 out of the last 10 years or something like that. What is the importance of this finals? Have you seen anything different with him as compared to the other finals?
I don't know that we've seen anything different, BJ. I think one of the things that's interesting, though, is that when LeBron James, you know, finally, you know, got into the, to, you know, finally earned that first ring and finally was able to validate his career in that really important way. Like, that was the biggest moment at the time, right? Every time you win another one, or there are other markers along the way. But in 2012, when he wins his first championship, that was the most important moment. Now, he was part of a super team then, and much criticized for doing so, playing with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. They win two rings. He goes to Cleveland. They go to another bunch of finals. He wins a championship for Cleveland that, again, in that moment, was one of the most important things, the most important moments of his career, because he had brought a championship home. What's happening now is interesting, in part because, and I don't think we've spent enough time talking about it, this is not a super team. This is not three stars. This is two stars and a very significant drop-off, with all due respect to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo, Alex Caruso, Markieff Morris, and on and on. This is not a super team. This is more the traditional model that was, you know, prior to the Celtics of Pierce, Allen, Garnett, prior to the Heat super team. This is a two-man squad. And so LeBron has no room for error. And Anthony Davis has very little room for error, as we saw, because on the night that he kind of, you know, gagged a bit or stumbled a bit, they lost that one. LeBron has had to, at age 35 and three quarters, whatever it is. Like, he's 36 in December. 36 with all the miles on him. It's just freaking incredible what he's doing this deep in his career, that he's still playing at an MVP level, that we're having a legit debate about AD versus LeBron for finals MVP. And normally when you get to that age, that's not part of the discussion anymore. Usually you've kind of shifted some of the burden to your younger co-star, and he has some, but not a lot. He's still the engine of this team. And I would argue still the MVP of this team. But you can see it when he says, BJ, his post-game remarks the other night about this being the most important game. Like, he's probably had other of those. And if he sat back and really evaluated, maybe this doesn't rank quite that high. But I think in the moment he feels that, because there was legit concern or a legit theme out there that maybe he doesn't get another one. Maybe he doesn't get another shot because of his age, because of the state of the Lakers when he first got there, because of the significant injury he had last season that kept them from making the playoffs at all. You had to wonder for a time, and you had to wonder whether he had enough around him and AD to make this run. All of those were legit questions. And here he is on the verge of a fourth ring that was not promised. And it opens the door now to potentially a fifth. And that's why I think in the moment he can look at it and go, wow, this, like, this is one of the most important moments of my career.
Howard, I know how much you love a NBA Finals MVP debate within the finals, but all joking aside, pivoting to Anthony Davis, game four, they come out, they put him on Jimmy Butler, a completely different look. Obviously, the Lakers determined to throw Miami off rhythm a bit, and despite Jimmy's hot start, Davis on Butler, and then what they decided to do in the pick and roll limited Butler much more than in game three. So my question for you is, what's impressing you most about the Laker defense, and what do you think Miami comes back with in game five to try to get going early?
Two things immediately come to mind, maybe three. One of them is split. The first thing is the split thing, which is, you know, kudos to Frank Vogel and his staff and Anthony Davis, because this just underscored how incredible a defender Anthony Davis is. And that's why the Lakers were pounding the theme afterward about he's the defensive player of the year. He should have won it over Giannis. And, you know, fair argument to make. Sorry, it's a regular season award. The finals don't count. But it underscores the value of AD and how versatile he really is as a not quite 7 footer, 6'10", whatever he is, that he can decide I'm the one who's going to cut off the head of the snake here. The other thing that strikes me though, is this is why they miss Goran Dragic. You know, Jimmy Butler can do a lot. Jimmy Butler is a phenomenal player. And the fact that he can shift roles from game to game or even quarter to quarter, you know, facilitator, playmaker, scorer, lead defender on the other team's best perimeter guy, whatever he needs to do. Like, Jimmy Butler can do all of it. And it's one of the reasons I love him as a player. But, you know, having to try to now get around 6'10 AD, and there's nobody else to pick up the slack. That they've got other guys who can handle the ball a little bit. But, you know, you want Jimmy Butler to be freer, I think, on offense to do his thing and not have to be your lead scorer and playmaker and to have to handle so much of the offensive burden. That's when you really need a Goran Dragic. And again, it's not like this is the first finals that has been affected by injuries. There are plenty of those. And not the first one involving LeBron, because we can go back to the other, you know, just a few years back when he was missing Kyrie for most of the finals and Kevin Love for all of it. And it's a fair what if for Cavs fans and for LeBron that year. But the Heat, because of the way they're constructed, like this really, like people have compared them. I don't know if it's a great analogy to the 2004 Pistons, but it really is more of that ensemble cast. It is about all of them. And I think that makes it that much harder when you lose a key piece like Dragic, especially given what he does as a playmaker and scorer and shooter. I just don't think you can't pull out any one of those threads and have them be the same. You know, the Lakers, as long as they've got LeBron and AD, they're fine. You could knock out any one of those rotation players, and I would argue that the Lakers are still okay. With the Heat, even if Bam and Butler are there, those other guys, whether it's Dragic or to a lesser extent Hero, some of these other pieces, like they all matter for them because they are more of an ensemble approach. And I just think it's too much to overcome.
You know, Howard, I got a 2-part question for you. There's been a narrative that's recently come up with the Miami Heat about this being a free agent destination, the next big free agent. Miami feel, or people around the league seem to feel, that Miami will have an excellent chance to land that free agent. I want to get your opinion on that. But also, the second part of that is, with Dragan's age, do you think they will bring him back as a key part? I mean, he's really blossomed here in the playoffs. Regular season was kind of, you know, he was coming off the bench, and suddenly now he's just really, he really took off before this injury. So kind of what's your opinion on both of those questions?
Yeah, the second one first. I mean, it's tough for the Heat because, you know, Kendrick Nunn had this phenomenal rookie season, but he hasn't been great since, you know, I mean, I think he was.
He had COVID, I believe. I think he had COVID, yeah.
He had COVID and I think was banged up a little bit too. So hasn't been as effective, and that's a concern, because what you would hope for when you discover a guy like him is like, okay, he's still youngish. He's not as young as being a rookie would suggest, but he's young enough. Maybe this is our guy going forward. and we pass the torch from Dragic to him. But I think what we've seen right now, and it's hard to judge again because of the circumstances, but they really miss Dragic and they really need him. And if you're letting him walk, who are you replacing him with? So this leads to the first question, which was as the Heat is as a free agent destination, and not so much for this coming off season, but next year when Giannis is obviously on the market, it becomes like the Heat have been in that discussion. Because when you talk about, you know, talk about Giannis around the league, and you talk, and this has been going on for 2 years already about where he might go if he were to leave Milwaukee. The Heat were in this discussion firmly even before they made this run. This run only strengthens that, of course. It reaffirms that Miami is not a destination just because of weather or lack of income tax in Florida or just the all the activities of South Beach. It's just a great organization to be part of, and one that that will always find a way to compete and contend for championships. So if you overpay anybody right now, this coming off season, you're possibly compromising your ability to chase Giannis or another max star. Oladipo has been linked to them a lot too in the rumor mill for the last year. I think that, you know, maybe you do the 1 year balloon payment, you know, like, you know, the Sixers paying JJ Redick 23 and a half or whatever it was a few years right back. You know, maybe there's a balloon payment to Dragic saying, look, we'll pay you as much as you would make over 2 years, but in a 1 year deal so that we can keep our flexibility for 2021. I would hope that they can do everything possible to keep this team intact. You know, I haven't looked at the books recently on them, but this is a really solid group. Now you've got some age concerns, not only with Dragic, but Iguodala. But Iguodala, Crowder, like all these guys, like it's just a really, the pieces fit.
Udonis Haslam.
Udonis Haslam come back for his 52nd straight season. Still playing at age 93. It's amazing.
That man a uniform. Get that man a uniform.
I hope Udonis Haslam never retires.
I'm sitting here envisioning Giannis plugging in with Bam, Butler, Hero, great call out on the Dragic balloon payment. I'm sure Goran did not want to go anywhere else in his career. So we had Ethan Skolnick, our old friend, on 2 weeks ago, and he was very confident in his, I think it was BJ, four teams that he thought had a better chance for Giannis than him returning to Milwaukee. It was Miami, it was Golden State, and I'm forgetting the other two at the moment. So
Dallas,
and then
Toronto.
Yeah.
So this is going to be very, very interesting for sure. You know, back to the Lakers for a moment. Friday night, they plan on wearing their Mamba jerseys. Obviously, the Kobe Bryant motivation has been an underlying factor here since January for them. Howard, you covered Kobe, you covered the three-peat Lakers. You know enough about LeBron James and his appreciation for history and his respect for those that came before him. And obviously, you know Jeannie Buss. So what would winning a title mean to the Lakers and the entire franchise and the fan base if this happens over the next couple of days?
Yeah, you know, it would mean a lot regardless. I think it's going to be more emotional because of the loss of Kobe. I think that's obviously, you know, not a stretch to say at all. It would be huge regardless because, you know, there is such a thing as Lakers exceptionalism. This is a franchise that I think, and they've earned this. They don't accept and are never satisfied with anything less than a championship. They don't hang division banners at Staples Center. They didn't at the Forum either. This is a team and a fan base, a franchise that identifies solely with championships as a measure of success. And so to go as long as they have, I think it was 7 years out of the playoffs, which, you know, for some teams, some franchises, that's, you know, that's just routine, you know, or, you know, 3, 4, 5 years without the playoff, like it happens, right? For the Lakers, that's death. That is 7 years of not being in the playoffs to the Lakers and their fan base is like 50 years to anybody else. That's not even a stretch. That is how it is there. And if you're
I'm thinking about the multiplier there. Yeah.
if you're a fan of a team that has a much longer drought, the Kings or the Knicks or the Timberwolves for a while there or whatever, and you want to scoff and say you don't know pain, Laker fans, that's fair. But just understand that it's a different scale there because they've been spoiled. They've been spoiled by it. I'm not saying it's right. They've been spoiled. So getting back to this point is huge. Also, listen, you know, when Kobe's in his twilight, those last few seasons, which you knew they were not going to be competitive, they were not going to be contenders by any stretch. They didn't have the right guys around him. His game is eroding. He's got a ton of miles on him. And there's still the resonance of having Kobe as a symbol of all the greatness that he represented and the franchise has enjoyed. But you're wondering the whole time, okay, who's next? And remember, they made a bunch of runs. They made a run at LeBron before and missed. They made a run, I think, at Carmelo at one point. And then they had obviously the failed trade for Chris Paul when Kobe was still, you know, more in his competitive prime. There's always this question of, well, where are the Lakers? We got to have somebody. You know, this is the franchise of, you know, Magic and Kareem and going all the way back to George Mikan and Jerry West and others all the way up through the present and through Kobe and Pau Gasol. Like, they don't identify with or cannot even conceive of not being a team that is that has a marquee player on it. So LeBron coming so close to the end of his career, I should even put an asterisk on that. I don't know. But LeBron coming in when he was starting at what was year 16 at that time, you know, there's no guarantee you're getting back to this mountaintop. So this would be huge regardless of everything that happened. But the loss of Kobe has added a different emotional element here. I think, and Jeannie Buss talked about this on my podcast this week, that, you know, for her too, like, okay, she's been part of this franchise since she was a teenager, literally a teenager with her father's ownership of the team. And she's been there through 10 championships, which is astounding to think in its own.
Wow.
But this would be the first with her as the team's governor. And I think, you know, it's, you know, this is her stamp. You know, she's the one who hired Rob Pelinka and also Magic, of course, initially. And it's on her, you know, under her leadership that they hire Frank Vogel, that they get LeBron, that they get Anthony Davis. This is, I think for her, there's a certain resonance. For LeBron, there's a certain resonance. For Anthony Davis getting his first. There's a lot of layers to this.
You know,
I need to have a laugh 1 second. Just, this will be my only Celtics mention of the show.
I'm going to hold you to that.
It's so disappointing. They blew it because they could have been part of this incredible historical storyline here between the history of battling LeBron 10 years removed from, you know, the Kobe, KG, Pierce, Powell final in 2010, and just bringing back Celtics Lakers in the bubble. It would have been so great. I digress. BJ, you want to take the next one? I wanted to use this as an opportunity. We went through the exercise a few minutes ago of talking about what the Heat future could look like here. And we talk about, yes, Mike, the Lakers are about to tie the Celtics for 17 titles. Thank you very much. It's been on my radar.
Funny how you left that out of your little Celtics.
Yeah, exactly.
Forgive me. We go through the exercise with Miami. You talk about the greatness of LeBron, Anthony Davis continuing to raise his bar, how that roster's put together. So, Howard, I put this to you, the future of the Lakers with AD and his contract situation, the LeBron James window for being elite-level LeBron James and the rest of the moving parts, how do you view the Lakers championship window right now with all things considered?
It's a really interesting question to ponder, in part because of what I said a few minutes ago when I said, like, there is no end. Like, we can't, like, LeBron and a retirement, LeBron and an end. I don't even know when that is anymore. Like, the window is like, you just knock down the, like, the exterior wall, like the whole building is now a win- like there is no window. The window is just, it's whatever the heck he wants it to be, I guess. He's defying physics and bad construction analogies. We always thought that if LeBron's championship window, if he was ever going to get to six, right? Six becomes the magic number because of MJ. Like, can he get to six? Well, maybe he can get to six, but not as the lead guy. Maybe by the time he gets to six, it's because he has delegated a lot of the responsibility to somebody else. As it turns out, probably Anthony Davis. Maybe there's even a third star coming in. Maybe another super team forms and he takes another step back. But the way he's playing right now, again, he finished second in the MVP voting. I know he took it as an insult, but it was actually an achievement. That was remarkable given his age and the miles and everything he's been through, that was in a position to take it. And by the way, if the season hadn't been halted by a global pandemic, he was on pace, or at least on track to potentially, excuse my cat, he was on track to potentially track down Giannis or MVP.
Wow. Fly Pence and Cat Beck.
She's going to end up standing right on the keyboard and we're going to have issues. I think that what he's shown us in this postseason run is that we shouldn't assume anything about how much longer he can perform at an MVP level and be the lead guy. Maybe he's got another year, two, three. And in that time, Anthony Davis, I think, will just continually get better. The Lakers will find other ways, I think, to supplement around them. They were already an attractive destination. I don't think that was in any danger, but it only gets better with them winning another title. So I think they're in position to extend this window. I mean, what, 3, 4, 5 years? I mean, LeBron, he could play till 40.
Yep,
you could easily envision him playing till 40 without, barring any crazy injury. And over the course of that time, maybe he goes from MVP of the Lakers to co-MVP to second option to whatever. Like, there are various versions of this because there's so much he can do, even if he's not your primary ball handler anymore. Say that, like, that's the first thing that has to go. It's too much wear and tear, too much energy expended to be the lead everything. Okay, get a nice young point guard to take some of the burden off there, make him more of a traditional forward. Shift from small forward to permanently at power forward, where he could play, he's just as big as Karl Malone was. Like, there are ways LeBron can extend this out, depending on who's around him. So I don't know that we should even talk about a window anymore. But I do think that, assuming that they win this one in the next day or a few, whenever it ends, and they have that ring, if he's got four now, and the way he's played this past season, six is no longer a crazy thought.
Yeah, I mean, he'll turn 40 in December of 2024, and then you have the storyline of his son. And I believe
have you already started this, Eric? Come on.
And then he's 4,100 and change behind Kareem on points. So that's, two very strong scoring seasons, or, leaks into the third if he's taking that slight step back. So one thing, Howard and BJ, chime in when you're good here, but we've talked about Miami, obviously talked about the Lakers, throughout the playoffs we've talked about how other teams could look going forward. Obviously there's been some moves made with Doc out at the Clippers, now in with Philly, Nash to Brooklyn, and obviously the draft is still over a month away, so a lot to be determined. But, looking at this offseason, not including the Lakers, not including the Heat, give us one team in each conference that you're looking forward, perhaps fascinated, to see what they're going to do in preparation to improve for next season.
So strictly about the offseason, strictly about how teams are retooling in these next months to come here.
Not rebuilding, Howard. Just retooling.
retooling, reloading.
You guys, the media talk about rebuilding. We're right side.
Yeah, no, I think, and you know, Howard, I want you to go in depth. I don't want you to be snackable here. I want you to really go in depth.
Stop it.
who fascinates you as far as taking the next step towards winning a championship?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like we're so immersed in the playoffs. I had to actually scroll the standings real quick to see who jumps out at me. Actually, the first team that leaps out is Houston, to be honest. They don't have a coach yet to fill in for Mike D'Antoni. And I don't know what the next coach can possibly do to make this team any better. I don't think that there's nothing that coaching is going to change here. And I don't know, the Rockets have really locked themselves in. You know, the trade for Westbrook, they gave up picks. They don't have a lot of assets. They don't have youth that you can easily point to and say, well, if that guy takes a step forward, they're really kind of maxed out on who they are. They're literally maxed out on the cap. They're maxed out on what their talent is. Harden and Westbrook, where they are in terms of age, they're not getting any better. They can only get worse. They can stay the same too, but there's no leap forward for this team. So the Rockets, who have been all in and who were the one team that really said, F it, we don't care if the Warriors have 3 stars, 4 stars, 18 stars, we're going for it. And year in, year out, they did their best to make a run at them. Well, you know, the bill has kind of come due on being all in all the time. And that's not to second guess it. I admired their audacity to decide to compete throughout that era and even in this past season with the Warriors momentarily out of it. But with the Warriors presumably back in the thick of things next season, and the Lakers as likely defending champions, and the Clippers still a strong team, and the Nuggets young and strong and only improving, it's crowded up top. And, you know, I Daryl Morey and his staff have been incredibly creative over the years. I don't know if there's enough creativity in the world, especially with a cap that could be shrinking and with just the league's finances being uncertain. I don't know how you get out of this one. They're really jammed up right now. So I'll be curious to see. I don't know that we're going to see anything dramatic. I'll just be curious to see whether all their creativity can push them forward.
That Clint Capella trade, I've been saying it for a couple of months. It's going to come back to bite him in the ass for a multitude of reasons. I mean, he obviously his contract was movable. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was around $18 million. So they went all in on the small ball. It didn't work. D'Antoni's out. Now you look at that roster. Who's a movable asset that can get you something back that could help boost Westbrook and Harden? And it's not there.
No, they really are locked up. I think everything should be on the table there. Every possibility should be on the table.
So you're saying Westbrook to the Knicks is a possibility?
Everything on the table. It's a big table.
Okay. Howard, so BJ, you first, then I'll follow.
Yeah, Howard, I want to circle back to you being living out here in LA for many years, the Clippers. Makes sense out of what the Clippers just did with the firing of Doc Rivers. Help me understand what that really was all about.
It was mutual
and being the Clippers. Clippers being the Clippers.
Just help me understand here. I mean, you know, I'm a huge Doc Rivers fan, and I was very disappointed when that decision was made. And I want to get your point of view, because everything is from a certain point of view. Tell me what are the Clippers thinking, and where do they go from here?
BJ, I'm like you. I would say I'm a Doc Rivers fan of him as a coach and a human being. I, like you, would say I'm, you know, I don't know if you would use this word or not, but I am baffled by the decision they made. I don't think it moves them forward. Like when you've reached this level where you are a contender and you fall short, fine. But you have the personnel, you have the right makeup, everything you've done for the last couple of years has to put you in this position. Every other move you make has to be, does this move us forward or is it a step backward? I don't see how replacing Doc Rivers with an as yet unnamed replacement is right. Moving them forward. And even the usual standby kind of reasons that you might cite, well, he'd been on the job for what, 7 seasons, whatever, you know, maybe things grow stale. Not in this case, it's a completely new team. Like this right. is not the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan Clippers. Like this is, so it can't even be, well, his voice was no longer resonating. No, like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard just got there. And the rest of that group have been there for, you know, 2-3 years, but that it can't be that. Sometimes you're not on the same page with the people above you, right? Like when you're a coach, you got to manage up and manage down.
Yep.
And this maybe is more a matter of that. I don't think it was about what he was doing managing down. Maybe it was about what he was doing managing up and how the people above him felt. Or maybe it's just that Steve Ballmer, who inherited Doc when he bought the team, who has done a lot to revamp a lot of other parts of the organization, including basketball ops, including removing Doc from the presidency of the basketball operations group. Maybe this was just his feeling like I got to make my imprint here too on the coach, on the bench. New owners do this, right? We see it a lot.
Yeah.
Is that what it feels like?
It feels like a new, that's what it feels like. New owner, a lot of people talking in your ear. But, you know, when you're in that position, I mean, they had a work stoppage. They come back. This is their first year. It just seemed like there was a lot of noise. But you know what?
Yeah.
They're right there. You have Doc Rivers as your head coach. He embodies everything we want in leadership. Preparation, say what you want. Like when I watched the series against the Denver Nuggets, say what you want. Like it wasn't a lack of preparation. The guys that were playing the game just couldn't get it done. I mean, they were up significantly in every game. I don't understand the decision, but it feels like a new owner. That's what it feels like to me. It just feels like one of those things you'll look back and you'll be like, okay, you're going to get rid of Doc Rivers. Who's better than Doc Rivers? Who's better? Where are you going to find this guy?
Yeah. And this is the thing, BJ, you know this too. There are a handful of coaches who we can all identify as in any given year or era who are the best in the league, right? Who are the elite coaches. There are a handful in any given year or era that you can point to and say, yeah, those guys aren't so great. And then there's a huge middle. Doc's at the top end. Doc's right. in the first group. And unless you're hiring Greg Popovich or Rick Carlisle or Eric Spoelstra and maybe a couple others, like who else are you hiring that you can identify right now that you know for certain would be as good or better? Because that's a small group. And those guys aren't available, the ones I just named.
right.
To me, it doesn't make any sense. The Clippers had all kinds of obstacles or challenges they were trying right. to overcome that aren't always in the hand. They're not controllable by the coach. Doc Rivers couldn't control the fact that Paul George had to have surgery on both shoulders and came back and had to miss the first, whatever, 15 games of the season, right. thus delaying his integration into that team. And that Kawhi Leonard was going to be load managed all season. So now those two guys aren't playing together that often. You have this other group, the group that won 48 games without those two, who are very prideful and have their own feelings about how their roles are being redefined with these two superstars coming in. And that certainly was an issue because Montrezl Harrell basically said it in January. There were times when guys were basically on the record with saying, yeah, we got some issues. We got some chemistry things to work out here. Now, among the coaches' burdens is to figure out those chemistry issues. But there's only so much a coach can do, too. And it all bled straight into, you know, then they got on a roll right before the lockdown hit in March. Then that interrupts everything. Trying to refine their chemistry when Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Pat Beverly all had to miss time in the bubble because they all had to leave for like, these are not things that the coach can control.
Right, exactly.
Infuriating. It's infuriating me with every mention.
And his group. If Ballmer and his group were disappointed by losing in the second round as opposed to that anticipated all LA battle in the conference finals. I get it. I get it. I picked the Clippers to come out of the West. I thought this was their year.
Yes,
I didn't think
they
were like leaped back better than the Lakers. I thought they had better depth, and I thought that would carry them through. It didn't. But it doesn't mean that this was a failure. It doesn't mean that there were weird circumstances and for them in particular this season, and running it all back one more year with a complete year with continuity, I think would have been a different result.
Yeah, I agree with you. I had them winning. The only thing that I saw with this team, which was obvious to me as you're building out a roster, which I think is very difficult to do in today's age, is they didn't have that lead guard who could push the tempo, that could compete in the way that you have to play today. You have to have a lead guard or a player that pushes the tempo and can break down and keep the pressure on the defense. And that, to me, was very obvious as you were watching the Denver Nuggets series. They have two guards, but they're not lead guards, you know, in talking about Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams. And that put an incredible amount of pressure on Kawhi Leonard to not only be the scorer and the dominant scorer that he is in crunch time, but he also had to facilitate and initiate the offense. So in watching the league, you have to have those players who can play against the Damian Lillards, who can play against the Luka Doncic, who can play against the James Hardens and the Russell Westbrooks and all of these lead guards. I mean, Jamal Murray just took his game to a whole nother level. And, you know, and you watch these young players, the Donovan Mitchells, when Conley missed games, they put him over at the point guard position and suddenly he erupts for like 50. So you need a lead guard. And that's the only thing that I can see with the Clippers team that they were missing. They didn't have a lead guard who could keep Steph Curry honest. Just keep him honest. Like, you know.
And BJ, to your point, I think maybe this was a mistake on my part in assessing them last fall. I thought that wouldn't matter because if you look at the LeBron James kind of model where, right, LeBron was always on teams where you had like a nominal point guard in name only, but he's really the point guard. Mario Chalmers wasn't the point guard. LeBron was the point guard, right? So as long as you have somebody competent at that position who brings something to the table, whether it's shooting, whether it's defense, they don't necessarily have to handle a lot because you had that. Now, I'm not saying that Kawhi and Paul George are at that level, but Kawhi and Paul George both are good with the ball in their hands and I thought could initiate enough that a Pat Beverly who'd bring the defense or Lou Williams who would bring the scoring punch, I thought that role was filled by guys who brought something else elite to the table, even if it wasn't as an elite point guard in the traditional sense, right? I was wrong on that part for sure. And you've just laid it out perfectly, BJ. I think that maybe what you need there is, to throw out a name, a Kyle Lowry.
I agree with you.
You know, like they were great together in Toronto. And it's because Kyle, you know, great, gritty defender, more vocal leader. And that's the other thing. Kawhi and Paul George, maybe they have other team guys on that team, on the Clippers team, who I think are vocal, but Kawhi and Paul George are both not lead by example types. They're not lead by force of personality types. And Kyle Lowry, as much as Kawhi was the MVP of that championship, Kyle Lowry was the heart and soul of the Raptors. Yep, and remains so. Right. Maybe that's what they need. Or a facsimile thereof, you know?
Yep. Yep. I agree. Thanks for discussing me with this Clippers. I've been waiting to I just couldn't understand it. You're like right there. I mean, the NBA it's you got to just figure it out. And they are so close. And I couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah. It's not a huge leap, right? Like they don't need some massive overhaul.
They need continuity and not a 4-month stoppage of the season.
Yes.
Like, very simple.
Yeah. And an upgraded point guard and not a massive upgraded point guard, but just an upgraded point guard. Now, I don't know where that comes. This is a fun scenario. This is if we're throwing out the hypotheticals and the offseason and everything else, like what are the Raptors going to do? Because, they need Siakam to take another leap forward to become, you know, their new franchise star. Right. But Kyle Lowry is up there in years and miles, and Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol are up there years and years. And you know, they both are free agents and could move on. Like, is Masai Ujiri going to take a step back? And he's trying to hold cap room for Giannis next year, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile,
VanVleet's a free agent. Yep.
So if you decide, you know what, we can't afford to lose VanVleet. He's the future. And he's got a lot of Kyle Lowry in him. And he could be that next guy for us for years to come. Well, then you're going to have to pay him a boatload to keep him. Maybe even come close to maxing him out to keep him from going to, say, the Knicks or something. Then you got to figure out what to do with Kyle Lowry. So maybe Kyle, you know, who knows? I'm just speculating out my ass. But overpay Fred VanVleet because he's that important. In that case, he's not an overpay, but pay him because he's important. And then maybe that pushes you in a position where you have to deal Lowry while you're trying to, make this roster a little younger. Let Gasol walk, let Ibaka right. walk, flip Lowry right. to, say, the Clippers. I don't know for who. But who knows? Maybe that's in place somewhere down the line.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more with you with that.
I believe Marc Gasol announced he is going to go overseas next season.
I saw a report, and then I thought I saw somebody else walk it back and say it wasn't. Right. But I haven't. I don't recall if that's fine or not. But yeah, wouldn't okay. surprise anybody, right?
On the radar. So. So to close, and Howard, you are most definitely a basketball historian at this point. When the historians look back on this season and at the bubble, what's going to stand out the most, and how is this thing going to be looked at over the course of time?
Yeah, I don't know how, you know, we all see this through our own lens, right? So a year from now, 5 years, 10 years, when people look back on it, I don't know how everybody else will see it. I think what I'll remember is the achievement of it, that they pulled this off at all right. is incredible. And that they did it in a way that had integrity to it. It was a respectable product. Like, it'll never feel right. It'll never feel, I was saying this on NBA radio last week, years from now, or maybe even 1 year from now, when they start running back the highlight reels of, here's all of LeBron's championships, or here's, you know, great shots over the course of finals history. And somewhere in there, 2020 is going to slip in, and you're going to go, what the fuck? That doesn't look like anything else.
Right.
It's going to be so jarring as we go from, like, you know, Kyrie Irving hitting that shot, you know, at Oracle Arena, or, Magic's baby skyhook or whatever. We're going to see all the usual highlight reels, Jordan switching hands in midair, all these things with the normal backdrop and crowd noise and atmosphere. And then you're going to see, like, LeBron going to the rack with a bunch of, like, virtual fans of various head sizes behind him. Or OG Anunoby's shot in an empty gym. Like, it's just going to look freaking weird. So we'll never get past that. And that doesn't mean it's an asterisk. It just means it's completely unique and bizarre. But I think the takeaway is the achievement, and that they were able to do this without having the virus infringe upon it at all, that the basketball was played at a really high level, that like I said, it had integrity, and that along the way, they did not lose sight of anything that was going on in this country or in this world. That they made sure that Black Lives Matter was front and center, very literally on the court, that the messages on the jerseys, that the PSAs that they did, that the discussions that were had, that the Wildcat strike that they held, that all of these things, none of these things detracted from the game, none of these things hurt the game or hurt the league. And I reject anybody who's going to try to superimpose that discussion on the ratings. Ratings are down for everybody, hockey, tennis, everything. Everything's down. It's just a weird year. Let's see where we are, you know, next year, assuming society is back to normal. But that the NBA was able to do all this and have the product still be great and have the competition still be at a high level and with an integrity to it, that this will feel absolutely like a legit, if strange, finals, and all the while not lose sight of the issues that were, affecting everyone in the whole country before they went to the bubble. I just think it's an achievement across the board. And I think, and I would hope, that history will view it that way.
And, very well said, my man. Very well said.
And to have a better plan for COVID than the United States government.
Not even close.
Think of the biggest blowout ass kicking in whatever sport and multiply it by 1,000. It's unreal. It's like you go back to that night in March where thank goodness they did what they did and they pulled the plug, and then you fast forward to this past week in our country where I don't even know how to describe it anymore. They're in a different dimension on another wavelength, and the NBA figured it out, kept everybody safe. Not just talking about the players and the coaches, like the media and the other staffers, and not one case. It's an incredible achievement an incredible model. Yep.
And I was skeptical. Not because I didn't think they could pull it off, not because I didn't have any faith in the NBA or anyone they were working with to do this. They had incredible medical experts to consult with as well. I just thought it's too much to ask of any organization to try to pull this. I just thought, and then there were some wild cards, right? There were some variables that you could not control for, like Disney staff coming and going every day and going back to their own homes and their own neighborhoods where the virus was possibly spiking, because Florida has been a freaking toxic hotbed for months. And so I thought that because of that, there was just enough risk that I was a little worried. I was worried for the older personnel and older coaches. I was worried for Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich and Alvin Gentry. I thought that maybe it was too much risk, even with all the controls that the NBA put in. But they did obviously an incredible job. We are, maybe, 36 hours or whatever from the end of the bubble here, or a few days at the most, maybe. And they've done it. They've pulled it off. It's kudos to all of them.
BJ, do you remember like our first show talking about this, where you were just asking, how exactly is this going to work?
Yeah, I wasn't sure they was able to pull it off. I wasn't sure, but you know what? I got to applaud what they've been able to do. I really do. I mean, what the NBA has done has been nothing short of incredible. It's been an example. You know what? I got to give them credit for being able to pull this off, for the protocols that they've had in place and having the discipline to do it. I mean, this is an amazing achievement to be able to pull this event off with so many moving parts, families coming in, families going out, players coming in, players going out. And it's been amazing to watch. And, I got to salute them for that one.
I'm starting to go into the go ahead, Howard.
Go ahead. The real challenge now is, how do you pull off next season without a bubble?
No, next season, Howard, because I don't think the players are going to be saying, I'm going back into a bubble. I can tell you that.
No. One time.
Did you guys see, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Shams last week who put something out on Twitter about kind of a regional four location format that they're looking at as kind of a safety net just in case. Did you guys see that?
I did not.
I might have missed that one, but that's something that has been floated, over the course of months. I mean, there are a number of ways to attack this, and one of them would be more regional, have teams travel less, you're playing some sort of round robin or something. There's been talk of, you create shorter mini bubbles where you're in for a few weeks and then out for a couple of weeks, just so that nobody is sequestered from their family or cut off for that long of a period. I mean, there are a number of ways to try to pull it off. There's, stay in home markets, but everybody just agreeing to severe restrictions. But even that could still come with a lot of risk. But everything, of course, just depends on where we are with regard to a vaccine and the availability of that vaccine, and where the greater society is. Like, there's a certain amount of this that's in the NBA's control that they can create the format and the restrictions to maybe pull it off. But so much of whether they can pull off anything that we could all throw out there right now, or that the league is pondering, still depends on where we are as a country with regard to the virus. And that part, remains an unknown as we sit here on October 8th. But if things change significantly in the next couple of months. You know, the NBA, here's one thing I will guarantee you guys. It's the only thing I know for sure. The NBA has a stack, you know, this high as my ceiling of scenario. These are not physical. They're actually in a computer somewhere. It's just not actually
in the matrix.
But if there were a stack, exactly. If there were a stack, it would be really, really high. They have gamed out a bazillion scenarios. If there's a vaccine by X date, if we need a bubble, if we need mini bubbles, they have gamed out every possible scenario. That is the one thing I can guarantee everybody. I cannot tell you when next season will start for sure or what it will look like. I can tell you that the NBA has a lot of really smart people, you know, with software and calendars and arena dates and various scenarios about what may or may not be possible due to the virus. They have gamed it all out. And when the moment comes to say, we've got to execute plan, you know, 573 part X, whatever it is, it's there. They have thought through all this.
Well, my
great
friend,
stuff, Howard.
Howard, whatever you do, your next project, your next book, I want in. I want in on this. I want to get to the basketball knowledge and just talk basketball. I appreciate you so much for coming on. And the next book, can I get in? Can I get in on the next? Can I get in?
BJ, I don't want to put him on the spot, but he's writing his next career chapter now. He's keeping it very, very under wraps. But I'm going to try to pry some info out of them off air. But Howard, whatever the next adventure is, and hopefully more stuff with us in the coming months as opportunities arise. Just thank you for always coming on, being a class act, and of course, a tremendous friend and ally. Appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate it, fellas. No, always happy to come on with you guys wherever I may land. Always happy.
Get back out here to California. Get back out here. We need you back out here in L.A.
Quite a show today, my friend. As I said at the top, only one Howard Beck, and nothing like getting the great storytellers on here with us.
Yeah, he's outstanding, and he's just, besides being excellent at what he does and sports and reporting and journalism, great guy, excellent sense of humor, and it's always a pleasure and a joy to be with him, hear his stories and hear his perspective. I mean, he's a wealth of insight, knowledge about the game, and he's just a terrific overall human being.
Yeah, great journey through the space. Lucky enough to have worked with him pretty much day to day for 2 years, and it's going to be interesting to see where he lands next as Bleacher Report and him not renewing their contract. But he's extremely talented, extremely thoughtful, and we'll be talking to him again soon. So great stuff today, my friend. If this is our last show before the end of the bubble, it's been great going through this with you week to week. And I also appreciate your check-ins when some of those games weren't going too well. So next week, we'll either be discussing a miraculous Miami comeback or the Lakers getting their 17th NBA title, LeBron James's fourth. So,
it's the same as the Celtics, right?
Yeah, they'll even it up. So, already sets up next year's storyline. And that's the shame of the Celtics not getting there. They could have at least had a hand in the Lakers not tying them and them getting 18. But as we talked about, and I talked about with a couple of people, they just weren't ready. So,
right.
Next year will be a promising one for them for sure. And we know Danny Ainge is not going to do anything hostile or crazy with his roster. I just think it's some fine tuning. And as we talked about with the Clippers, you know, getting yourself going again and making a run at a championship with a 4-month layoff under these circumstances is quite a challenge that no one has ever experienced before. So big off season for them and many other teams that continue to view themselves as contenders. So special thanks, as always, to producer Mike Lieber, the one and only Bruce Bernstein, editor Tom Phillip, and the entire Pure Hoops Media team. Check out the Mike Wise Show, dropping each and every Monday. John Fanta talks college ball every Tuesday with Full Court Press. catch and shoot 2.0 with Aaron Berlin and Otto Strong dropping each and every Wednesday. Thursdays bring you Monica McNutt and King McClure with Buckets, Boards, and Blocks. And Fridays, of course, the Pure Hoops podcast with BJ Armstrong and myself, Eric Newman. Please check out all of our shows, subscribe, download, rate, review, share. Most of all, enjoy. We'll see you next week. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay pure.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.